All right. Welcome. We are in week four of our class on the theology of creativity, and we're going to be building today on what we have been talking about up to this point. So some of you haven't been here with us, and let me just give a quick review of what we have talked about. We spent the first week talking about what creativity is, basically just how do we define creativity, how do we understand it, what are we even talking about. Week two, we looked at the actual creative act of the Creator himself, and so we looked at how God creates and what that means for who we are. And then week three, last week, we talked about what it means to be created in the image of God, and specifically then the cultural mandate, what God tells us we are to do with what he has given us. And so we said we have been called to creatively develop and make in the world to shape the earth in line with God's good order. And so what we saw is that building and making and work, all of these things existed before the fall. These were all part of God's good creation. Creativity then is not a byproduct of being human. It's designed into us as the tools by which we do what God has made for us to do. This also means that creative acts, things like culture and art and government and engineering, these aren't just the byproducts of human ingenuity. These aren't just the things that human beings figured, hey, we got to do something while we're here anyway. We might as well make these things. No, all of this is part of God's plan and process to fill the earth and subdue it. And so this allows us to find good in the world around us and to join in the acts of culture making as an act of worship. And so creativity isn't just something that's allowed then for the Christian. It's something that is expected, and even more than that, something that we are commanded by God to do. This was very helpful for me as I was trying to figure out how do I engage with the world around me? What is a worthwhile use of my time? As I was trying to figure out how the secular and the sacred overlap. Now, usually in kind of a development of the theology of creativity, and when I say usually, I mean the one other time that I've taught this, what I would do next is kind of start to explain the fences that God sets up, right? He sets us out and gives us this freedom, but then things go wrong, and for that reason, God gives us some warnings in Scripture. He shows us where creativity can go if we aim it in the wrong direction. But I've decided to shift gears a little bit tonight. And so instead of moving on to what not to do tonight, I thought it would be helpful to give an example of what kind of living out this cultural mandate faithfully looks like. And lucky for us, God gives us an example of this in his word. So if you were here for church on Sunday, we talked about the tabernacle. And while God gave lots of direction as to what the tabernacle was what it was supposed to look like and how it should function, the tabernacle didn't just appear out of nowhere. Somebody actually had to construct it. Somebody had to build it. And even more than just build it, somebody had to come up with how do we take what God has commanded and actually physically make that. And what's crazy is God didn't just hand this to the Israelites and go find someone to do it. He actually called out by name the people that he had prepared to do this work. And so that's two guys named Bezalel and Aholiab, and we're going to talk about them tonight. I'm going to try to say their names as many times as I can because, you know, it's fun. So we're going to look at these two and how God describes his work and how he works through them creatively. And so this is in Exodus 35. This is what it says. It says, "Then Moses said to the people of Israel, 'See, the Lord has called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and he has filled him with the Spirit of God, with skill, with intelligence, with knowledge, and with all craftsmanship, to devise artistic designs, to work in gold and silver and bronze, in cutting stones for setting and in carving wood, for work in every skilled craft. And he has inspired him to teach, both him and Aholiab, the son of Asmah, of the tribe of Dan. He has filled them with skill to do every sort of work done by an engraver or by a designer or by an embroiderer in blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twined linen or by a weaver, by any sort of workman or skilled designer.'" Bezalel and Aholiab, and every craftsman in whom the Lord has put skill and intelligence to know how to do any work in the construction of the sanctuary shall work in accordance with all that the Lord has commanded. And Moses called Bezalel and Aholiab, and every craftsman in whose mind the Lord had put skill, everyone whose heart stirred him up to come and do the work. Now, if you look at the description of what the tabernacle is supposed to look like, it's lots of chapters long, and it's somewhat specific. And like I said before, though, it does leave quite a few gaps. It does leave quite a few things as to kind of, things that had to be figured out creatively. But what we see with the tabernacle is not just a plain building. Yes, it's a tent, but it had lots of design to it. It's not just a converted warehouse. And it shows us that God cares about beauty. God actually wants to be worshipped in this beautiful way. We have a God who is the origin of all beauty, and he cares about beauty and aesthetics, and they play a role in how we relate to God. Now, we see in this text that God then takes credit for every aspect of the creativity that these two people have in them. It tells us that God is going he calls out Bezalel and Aholiab, but he says specifically they are going to use the skill that I have put in them. I have filled them, and that's what they are going to use to create what I have called them to do. And so their ability and the enjoyment that others receive from their gift, this all comes from God. And I want to explore this idea just a little bit. God is claiming here that everything good and beautiful that is created in this world comes from him. We see that in James 1:17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father. So it doesn't matter how it gets to you. It doesn't matter through whom the design comes, the beauty comes. All of it is coming from God. Everything. So how does this affect how we should think about being creative? Specifically, how we are creative. How does this affect how we think about being creative? Yeah. Yeah, God gets credit, right? So we should be grateful for whatever it is that we're able to do. What else? Yeah. Specifically, if those things are coming through us, there's no place for pride. The worship goes to God, or the glory goes to God. It also puts some responsibility on us for whatever God has put in us. Because these things, these skills that we have are not just ours. God has given us these skills in order to do something with them. We are stewards of what God has given us. How does this affect how we approach art and beauty in the world? Okay. What do you mean by that? Okay.
So, honor what other people do then as being their gift from God. You can be really critical about what we don't like in art.
Maybe you can be critical, Debbie.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it changes how we interact with the things in this world. And so we're looking at what is good in a different way. It also, it forces us to actually then honor the gift of God in other people. So this gets back to that pride thing. No longer does it have to be this kind of competition between us as to whose things are more beautiful, but actually being able to now see the good in all of these things. Now, I skipped, as I said, they kind of jumped over the whole the fall and all the warnings, and this plays into that, where when we interact with any sort of thing in the world, we're interacting with something that is good, that has been twisted by sin. So because it comes through human beings, every good and beautiful thing is somehow tainted by sin as we bring it into the world. And so this gives us kind of a means to go, we don't just categorize things into like the good things and the bad things, right? The good things being family-friendly radio or these sorts of things, and the bad things being anything that comes from a secular place, but going, each one of these things is a good thing that has been tainted by sin. So the bigger idea that we're getting to here is what is known as common grace. What is common grace? So that is one aspect of common grace, is what he has kind of displayed to everyone, right? Everyone is able to see certain aspects of who he is. You mean that?
Yeah.
Right? Matthew 5:45, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and he sends rain on the just and on the unjust. What is this telling us? You what? We don't get good things just because we do good things, right? And God is blessing people, both his people and people who are not his, right? Both Christians and non receive some gifts and abilities from God. Some of his beauty, some of his goodness, he pours out into the world through people who do not love him. What does that have to do with how we approach creativity? There are some really creative people who are not good. Yeah, so I taught this to just out of high school age kids, and I was like, it's like the movie Amadeus. And they all looked at me, and I'm like, never mind. That movie came out in 84, and no one knows what I'm talking about. Right, but what that movie is it's, you know, it's about... It's about Mozart, and Mozart has all of this talent, and there's a guy going, I would use that talent to worship God, and yet, God, you gave it to this guy, this schmuck who's, you know, a terrible human being. But what we see in that is that God is working in his world, again, not only through his people, especially when it comes to creativity and beauty and development and subduing the world, he's doing it through all people. And so when we interact with the world, we should be looking for that good in all of those things. Quote from John Calvin, he says, then follow the arts, both liberal and manual. Whenever we come upon these matters and secular writers, let that admirable light of truth shining in them teach us that the mind of man, though fallen and perverted from its wholeness, is nevertheless clothed and ornamented with God's excellent gifts. If we regard the Spirit of God as the sole fountain of truth, we shall neither reject the truth itself nor despise it wherever it shall appear, unless we wish to dishonor the Spirit of God. We marvel at them because we are compelled to recognize how preeminent they are. But shall we count anything praiseworthy or noble without recognizing at the same time that it comes from God? What he is getting to is that if we just kind of dismiss everything that doesn't come from a Christian source, we miss out on so much of what God is doing. We don't see the larger picture of how God is working in his world, how he's bringing creativity and good. Theologians point out that the cultural mandate that we talked about last week was given to humanity, right? It was given to Adam and Noah before God called out his specific people. So the cultural mandate is something that all human beings share, not just the people of God. And so cultivating the world is not just a Christian endeavor, it's a human one. And God has equipped all people to play a role in this. Which means whenever we interact with a human artifact, it will be a sinful distortion of God's goodness. But instead of being scared away by that sin, instead of going, oh, this isn't entirely holy, so we should totally stay away from it, we should be able to look for God's goodness, God's grace, God's beauty in it. And that's a learned skill. And as we create specifically, we should humbly acknowledge that God is the one creating through us. Now, this brings us back to Bezalel and Aholiab. In Bezalel and Aholiab, God actually says, this is how I do this. This is how I work through people. This is how I fill them. This is how I equip them. And there are five things that he fills them with. That didn't go. Nope. There we go. So there are five things that God says he fills Bezalel and Aholiab with, five ways that he is working through them. He says that they are filled with the Spirit of God, they are filled with skill, they are filled with intelligence, they are filled with knowledge, and they are filled with craftsmanship. So we're going to look at these five things. First one says they are filled with the Spirit of God. What does that mean? What does it mean to be filled with the Spirit of God? Okay, so I just got done talking about common grace. Really kind of making this big, but in the case of Bezalel and Aholiab, he's talking specifically about they were called out for a specific purpose to act for God and to build this thing for his people. These two are charged with crafting the elements of the tabernacle and are filled specifically with the Spirit of God for this task. And so while all of us have been tasked, all of us have been called to be creative, some of us have been called and tasked for a specific purpose. It's a good reminder to us sometimes that this whole, like, you can be whatever you want to be, isn't necessarily true. Some people have been called out and prepared by God for specific things in his kingdom. And it's an amazing thing when we get a glimpse of that and we can kind of feel sometimes like, man, I know what that is. Second one, filled with skill. What does that mean?
Ability.
Right? What does it mean that God has filled them with skill? Yeah. It does not mean that. Jumping ahead in my notes, thank you. I was going to say that. Right? Filled with skill. Some of us are more skilled at certain things than others. Some things come somewhat more naturally to others. I have a friend with perfect pitch. I don't know if you've ever met someone with perfect pitch or had to sing with them, and they're constantly looking at you like you're off just a little bit. And you're like, hey, you're a jerk. They can hear it without trying. There is a chocolatier in this town who has perfect taste. Forte Chocolates downtown. When she was at the Art Institute of Seattle, it was actually found that she had perfect taste. And all of these companies were trying to get her to actually be a taste tester for like all of these kind of developed goods. And she decided to go into chocolate instead because she can pull out, she can taste something and tell you everything that's in there. She can taste all the pieces as it's in her mouth. That is a specific skill and ability. Not everyone can do that. So some people, I know I have another friend who has a photographic memory. There are things that that person can do that I will never be able to do. But skill also requires development. Right? And so what we see is there are some people who have actually that natural ability, but they waste it. Right? They don't steward well what God has put in them. And so skill is both an inherent ability, but also the development of this with the tools that God has given. And so the idea of God giving them skill is, again, he gave them something at the beginning, but they had to actually steward that with care and concern. All right, filled with intelligence. What is intelligence? Yeah. Charlie. Explode. Yeah. So that is one aspect of intelligence that actually kind of almost fits more with knowledge, right? Knowledge is remembering all the pieces and parts and how all of it functions together. When we think specifically of intelligence, right? Intelligence is usually something, like if you take an IQ test when you're young and when you're older, you usually kind of get a similar score, even though you've learned a lot of things along the way. The intelligence, the ability to process information, the ability to kind of put things together and work through things is what we're talking about when we're talking about intelligence. That's what makes it necessary for you, I mean, when you're kind of problem solving and trying to work through, yes?
I would say a better translation would be
common sense.
Common sense? You have people that are super knowledgeable, but they don't have common sense, so
their house explodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, intelligence definitely keeps you from misapplying your knowledge.
Other translations say the understanding. They translate that.
Intelligence is often retaining the information that you get and taking disparate pieces of information and drawing it together.
Yeah. Yeah, so intelligence is kind of the bigger, broad kind of spectrum that some of the others fit underneath. And specifically, when you're talking about creativity, like again, a good portion of it is, and it does end up kind of being some of this problem solving. And you have to know the pieces in order to put that together. You do have to kind of go, okay, here's what I know about this, but here's where I'm trying to get, and how do I make these things work in order to get there? One of the interesting things when you get to, again, the Bezalel and Aholiab thing is, as I said before, if you look at the descriptions that God gives them, there's certain things where he says it's supposed to be this long, it's supposed to be this wide, but there's other things that are somewhat general. Like, it should have purple linen in it. Okay, well, that doesn't really tell you exactly how you're going to put that together. And so it requires you to be thinking about, okay, how do all of these parts work together? All right, knowledge, we've kind of already gone into that. There's a lot of things that go into making, and as soon as you start putting things together, it requires all of those parts of knowledge, right? If you're a painter, you have to remember your prep. You have to remember, kind of all of the pieces, or else you end up with bubbles on the side of your building, or you end up with, all of these things that go wrong because you haven't done what needs to happen in order to get there. It's developing a base of knowledge that helps us to push through obstacles and grow and develop new things. All right, what about craftsmanship? What is craftsmanship?
I think when I use that word, a lot of times I'm just referring to
It's vague.
It's not his job. It's his life. That's what craft
is. A piece of furniture with really good craftsmanship is going to be amazingly better and last forever than a piece of furniture with poor craftsmanship.
Right. Right. And specifically the people who craft that, I mean, said it before, they do it over and over and over. I mean, right now the Olympics are going on. One of the most amazing things is to watch people do things where you're like, they had to have done that a first time. Like, what made you think that you could flip that many times and not land on your head? Well, they did land on their head, and then they got up and they did it again. So you see it in that sort of thing where somebody does something so many times that it actually becomes like they don't even necessarily think about it the next time that they do it because they have developed that craftsmanship. Yes?
Can you explain,
Yep. So skill is like the ability that you are given, right? So you have an ability to do something. There are people who there's certain things they will never be able to do, right? I will never fly an airplane because I'm just too darn tall. Right? There's things that just because of who we are and how we've been built, there are things we can do and can't do. Craftsmanship is that over and over and over the development where you apply that skill to the point where you are a craftsman. Right. Well, it's you do it over and over again so that you actually then are able to do it well. So the craftsmanship is both something has craftsmanship at the end of the day because you have developed the craftsmanship. So you have that in you. Yes.
So craftsmanship, you have to apply knowledge and be intelligent of how your skill is used and it being mastered.
Yep. Yeah. And so a lot of times when we're thinking about, say, if we're just thinking about art, we usually see the final product. And so we can see if someone has craftsmanship by whether or not they can produce a really good product at the end. But sometimes in the case of like an Olympian, you actually get to see like almost the process to get there. One of the things that I love to go to concerts. And to watch musicians who are really, 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 really good, who have practiced and developed it, it is one of the most mesmerizing things to watch them play something where they are doing things where you're like, oh my word, you are producing that sound by what you are doing right now. And you created that instrument yourself, in the case of Radiohead. So there is that kind of, what? Yeah, by the way. Yeah, craftsmanship is that kind of applied aspect of it, but also it's something then that once you have done these things over and over again, it's now part of you. You are now a master craftsman. You are able to do those things well.
Would craftsman also fall into, like, somebody who, like, if you were to pick a thing, a craftsman could kind of epitomize the bestness of that thing? Like, you know, like, the bestness, the most bestness part of it?
The most bestness part of it?
Like,
well, here, what?
Well, I wouldn't say necessarily could you pick a best painter, but there's many versions of painting and a craftsman would be somebody who epitomizes, that's the word of best, or epitomizes, kind of me.
Yeah, well, what we're talking about here is what God has filled someone with, all right? He has filled them with both the skill and the effort to go through it a bunch of times so that they eventually develop that into craftsmanship. Which is interesting because then when you start going, you know, sometimes I would go, yeah, God gave me the skill, but I worked really hard to become a craftsman. And what he's reminding us here is, no, he gave you the ability to do all the development to become the craftsman as well. And so it's God taking credit for all aspects of bringing them to the point that they are ready to be the ones who are making the tabernacle. So a lot of times that's where people want to go, is like really narrow it down to kind of like, so does everyone have one of these things? I mean, in some sense, yes, God has given gifts to every person, but those are so varied that some of them you wouldn't put into the idea of what is creative. But there is the aspect that even with this, right, all human beings, whether they are Christians or not, understand this idea of being so kind of in touch with these things that they actually kind of come to this place where it's almost divine. Like you get to a place where you are actually doing something that you have practiced so much, that you have done so much, that you've gotten really good at, that it's almost hard to explain. But they tried really hard in a movie recently. You guys know what movie this is from? Soul. I actually was thinking about this, and I was like, I'll ask the kids what they think, and then I'm like, oh, there might be parents who don't want their kids to watch Soul. But do you guys remember what part of the movie, anybody who saw this is from? Come on, it's Pixar. Who doesn't watch? Okay. It's fine. What? It's all good. It's all good. What about Amadeus? No? Okay. People are in the zone. They're in the zone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's actually trying to find what we were just talking about. Like, do I have that thing? You know, in this they call it your... I think I have it written down so I wouldn't forget. Your spark. That's what it is. Your spark. But this specifically is a section where he's up in the great whatever in the world. And they're talking about people who are in the zone. So this is people who are down on earth and they are kind of in that moment where they're doing music, where they actually kind of, again, it's that moment where you kind of are just so attached to it that, again, you're in the zone. And the reason why they're trying to kind of do all this, the reason why they felt the need to create an entire backstory, because they can't say that God exists. So they have to create this whole story because this is a very real thing that people experience. It's a very real thing that people get into where they're like, I am doing what I was called to do, and I'm in that moment where I've worked so hard at it that I almost, again, it's you can't hold on to it, though. That's kind of what part of this thing is. You can't stay there, but you have that moment where you are kind of in line with who you were created to be. And ultimately, that is a picture for us of really what heaven will be, but also God's creativity in us, what he has filled us with. When we are stewarding it well, we actually are kind of in sync with the Creator. And we have this moment where all of a sudden we can kind of almost see, like, this is what it is supposed to be. And this is something, as I said, this is not just something that Christians experience. This is something that if you explain this to people, and like, you know, it's why they have to create a backstory of the great beyond and the great before and the spark, because people know that there is more to life when you have kind of this realization that there's more going on than just protoplasm doing what it does under these temperatures, right? There's actually a creator, and there's creativity, and there's beauty, and none of those make any sense in a world that just kind of happened. And so this aspect of common grace, and again, as we go out into the world, it's not just that we're looking for good out there, but we're trying to introduce people to the great creator. We're trying to show them that this stuff is real, because there really is a God behind it who has created us to be who we are, who is filling us. And the reason why we're able to do anything good or experience anything good or have any sort of beauty in this world is because of him. It's not about pursuing your spark or your individual thing. It's ultimately about finding him in this and worshiping God for who he is because of what he is doing through us. I'm going to end there and hand it over to Sharon.